It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Middle children have a syndrome. I've always thought it weird that just because you have someone older than you and someone younger than you in your family, you have something wrong that sounds scientific. Of course, there's nothing wrong with middle children. Our guest today is a proud middle child, and he worries that Western civilization is losing something with the decline in families with three or more children. For this first segment, we want to talk about middle children. I'm going to ask the older children who are listening and the older take charge children to hold off till calling till 20 after the hour. I will not ask that of the younger children because they're not going to follow the rules anyway. Seriously, we want to hear from middle children this segment. Do you think your birth order had an effect on you? If so, what was that effect? 800-642-1234. The email is ideas@WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. Adam Sternberg is an Edgar-nominated novelist and a contributing editor to New York Magazine. He recently wrote an article for The Cut titled The Extinction of the Middle Child. Adam, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks.
So I should note that Adam is coming to us via Skype. Skype makes us say that. So when people think of middle children, Adam, what kind of profile do you think that they're building in their minds?
Well, the traditional stereotype of the middle child is sort of defined by what you're not. You're not the lionized eldest child who, you know, presumably carries the expectations of the entire family on your shoulders. Okay. You're not the baby who presumably grows up being sort of coddled and cared for and showered with attention. You're just kind of stuck in the middle. And I always talk about, you know, the classic pop culture middle children are Peter and Jan Brady, because I grew up watching the Brady Bunch.
Right.
And, you know, when we think of Jan, we think of someone who's sort of defined by constantly complaining about how Marcia gets all the attention and she doesn't get any. So traditionally, that's how people have thought about middle children, but it's actually starting to change and people are starting to look at some of the attributes that we thought of as potentially detrimental and looking at them like they might be strengths.
Like what?
Well, for example, you know, there's a body of research that's come up recently where psychologists have looked at middle children and said, you know, if you are not the subject of all the parental expectation, for example, that leaves you free to maybe follow a different path than the sort of expected path that is the eldest child might follow. You know, there's research that implies that eldest children tend to go into fields that are very established. They're disproportionately become doctors. There's a disproportionate number of eldest children who are CEOs of companies. But middle children, it seems, tend to be risk takers and trailblazers. And, you know, One example you can sort of pull out of the ether is Bill Gates is a kind of classic middle child. He went off and started an entire new industry. So that's one way in which a sort of what was traditionally thought of as a sort of disadvantage can actually be seen as an advantage.
So you started thinking about middle children, I assume, because you are a middle child, right?
Well, I am a middle child. I'm what's sometimes referred to in psychology circles as a classic middle because I'm one of three. So I have an older brother, a younger sister, and I'm right in the middle. But of course, anyone who's between the oldest and the youngest, no matter how many kids there are, would be considered a middle child. And now that I'm an adult and I have a child of my own, and I started looking around at my peer group and realizing that very few people I know have more than two kids, that two seems to be the norm. A lot of people have one. I have one. And so I started thinking, well, if you have two or one, there is no middle child. Mm. And when I looked into the demographic statistics, it turns out that this is an actual sort of demographic shift that's gone on over the last 40 years.
So talk to me before we get to the numbers. You have an older sibling and a younger sibling. How are you because you're sitting in the middle here?
Well, another sort of classic middle child attribute that psychologists have seen is that middle children tend to be good negotiators and they tend to be peacemakers. And the theory is that because you're sort of torn between the oldest and the youngest, that you're the one who's sort of in the middle trying to make sure that everyone's happy. And that is certainly something that applies to me and my family. I feel like I'm prone to be like to see all sides and try to get everyone to get along. Of course, with anything to do with these sort of birth attribution theories, there's an element of sort of self-fulfilling prophecy to
right.
it. You know, not unlike a horoscope, right? If you hear that, if you're a Leo and you hear that Leos are hot-tempered and you say, oh, I'm hot-tempered, there must be something to this. But to a certain extent, you're looking for confirmation of qualities you feel you already have. But I definitely have the sort of body of middle child qualities.
We are talking to Adam Sternberg. He wrote a piece for New York Magazine talking about the extinction of the middle child. This first segment, especially, we want to hear from middle children. 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So you mentioned statistics a minute ago. Talk to me about how the statistics have changed in the last 40 or so years.
Well, when I looked into sort of the birth rate in America, there was a study put out in 2015 by the Pew Research Institute, and it turns out that in 1976, the most common family configuration in America in terms of completed families, and it's a little bit different, it's difficult to sort of, you know exactly how many kids someone's going to have depending on when you poll them. But they looked at what they considered to be completed families where the mother was over the age of 40. Hmm. And in 1976, the most common family configuration was four or more children, which kind of shocked me. I grew up in the 70s. I was one of three. So I had a sense that families were bigger. But to think that that was the most common configuration, that really surprised me. Mm-hmm. And then the second and third most common configurations, and fairly closely together, were two or three kids. And then only about 10% of families had one kid. If you come ahead 40 years, suddenly that's reversed. The most common configuration is two. Twice as many families have one kid, and only about 10% of families now have four or more kids. So when you put the two-child families together and the one-child family, suddenly you've got about over 60% of the families, almost two-thirds, are families that don't have a middle child. So then looking at the kind of research about what kind of attributes middle children traditionally have, it was sort of a fun thought experiment to say, okay, if we're entering a world where there's fewer middle children, what is that going to mean for all of us?
So I want to know why there are fewer middle children. Is it financial? Is it that people don't want to deal with you know, getting pregnant, that both partners are working? Why?
You know, I think it's a combination of all those factors. You know, it's really hard to pinpoint one thing and say, oh, this is the reason. But, you know, the sort of birth rate in terms of the average number of children per woman in the U.S. has been falling and is now at a historic low. And, you know, depending on who you talk to, there's a number of different sort of evident explanations for that. People are definitely waiting longer to get married. People are waiting longer to have kids. So the window in which you might have, you know, whatever your ideal family size is now smaller. And, you know, a lot of people would cite the expense of raising children. Post-secondary education is more expensive than ever. Housing
right.
is
so,
more expensive.
So people are paying back their student loans and having one less child, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely seems to be a correlation between the sort of life cycle of an adult and the number of kids that you think of as being the ideal. And then, of course, over time, it's just a sort of societal norm that shifts.
Right.
I think, you know, for my parents, three just seemed like the right number. It was what their friends had. It was what they saw on TV. You know, when I was growing up, there was shows like Eight is Enough, right?
Right.
That was
I remember that
crazy.
Too, right?
Yeah.
So,
and now I feel like you know,
three is enough.
Three is enough.
three, well, that would be
fine.
A thing.
You know, with
right.
two, you have each. Everyone has a sibling. You're a nice family unit. It seems very manageable. So
that is true. We've got a couple of calls coming in. Marcus from Milwaukee is a middle child. Welcome to the program, Marcus.
Hi, thank you. So, yeah, like your guest today, I have an older brother and a younger sister. And I have noticed that in my life, I don't want to say necessarily shortchanged, but I feel like my brother, since he was the first, he got to mess everything up and, you know, make bad decisions. And then all kinds of rules were put into place for me.
Mm.
And then my sister, as she came up, they didn't so much apply to her because she was the baby girl. And so I feel like she was coddled. And my brother, he went into one of those classical fields. He's an engineer. But I myself have actually had a little bit more freedom. And so kind of had the ability to chart my own course, which has made my life quite a bit more interesting.
Interesting. What do you do?
I actually do remodeling and construction.
Oh, okay, cool. So you like being a middle child. This is good.
Yeah, it's given me a whole set of life skills that I kind of feel like my brother and sister don't have. So, I mean, maybe they got shortchanged. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you very much, Marcus. We're going to go to Randy before we hit break. Randy, welcome to the program.
Hi. By the way, I read mysteries like a sponge, and I don't recognize your name. What kind of books have you put out?
We are talking to Adam Sternberg, and we will have him answer that question in a moment. We will come back to Randy. We're talking about middle children. Middle children are going extinct, says our guest today, Adam Sternberg. Are you a middle child? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. We're going to talk about older children and multiples in a moment. It's The Morning Show. Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're exploring birth order with Adam Sternberg, who wrote a piece for The New Yorker examining and perhaps even lamenting the decline of families with middle children. Are you a middle child? Do you believe the stereotype that you are a better mediator than your siblings? Are you a twin or a triplet or higher? What is your experience like? And okay, older and younger children, do you fit into the stereotype of your birth order? The number to call is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Adam, we're getting lots of phone calls here, but I just want to say we ended with why people have fewer children, and partly that is because of money and lifestyle and what have you. But what about multiples? In the last 20, 30 years, there have been a lot more multiple births. I can tell you that just in this at WPR, I have twins. Another host here has twins. The afternoon host has twins, and one of the people that works in our office is one of three. She's a triplet. So, and that's just here. Like, that's just on this side of the building. What is it with multiples? And maybe do multiples bring something in terms of, like, they're born into a relationship? Do they bring something that we're losing with middle children?
Well, I think definitely if you have twins, you can attest to the fact that it's a whole other kind of relationship. And, you know, the interesting thing about this sort of birth order study is that it's actually a fairly new arena of study. And this woman I spoke to, who is a professor in California, Catherine Simon, she wrote this great book that just came out a few years ago called The Secret Power of Middle Children. And part of the reason she wrote it is because she was interested in looking at the research about middle children and realized there wasn't any. So she kind of went out and did a book about it. You know, there had been a lot of research into oldest kids. I mean, it's sort of conforms to the stereotype, right? Middle
right.
children are sort of neglected. There'd been a lot of research about oldest kids, a little bit about youngest, and she really, you know, is now pioneering the look at the middles. And so multiples are now a new arena of study as well. And I think people are looking to see how that affects the family dynamic.
You write that that in studying middles, traditionally receive less financial and emotional support from their parents. Is that a stereotype, or do you think that's really true?
You know, it's a difficult thing to measure, obviously, but it is something that psychologists have found as they've interviewed, you know, children in the same family. And it's not to say that middle children obviously are less loved or less valued than their siblings, but it's simply, if you think of sort of parental resources, and that would include financial resources and time and attention, all those things that every parent can recognize, you know, you have a limited amount of, that if you think of that as a pie, you know, the more children there are, the more that pie is going to be divided up. So it makes sense that if you have just one child, they're going to be showered with all of the resources. And then once you have another child, it gets halved and then, you know, split by three.
But middle children tend to be more friendly, right? They tend to have more friends than their older or younger siblings.
Yes, there's this idea that because you are a little bit starved for attention in the family, that you look for strong bonds outside of the family. And so, you know, when they look at middle children versus the oldest child, for example, in a set of siblings, often the middle child will have a greater and more complex friend group. Middle children, for whatever reason, are the most loyal marital partners and have the lowest rate of divorce. And the theory is that, again, it's that they, when they have a bond with someone, they're really invested in maintaining that bond. Whereas, not to disparage an eldest child, but the idea is with the eldest children, they're a little less willing to sort of settle for something. They have this idea that they deserve more, and that might be a complicating factor in their you know, adult relationships.
We are talking about middle children and a little bit more about birth order, and we are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Emily from Plymouth, welcome to the program.
Oh, good morning. So I am a middle child. I am in what you describe as a true middle. I have an older sister and a younger brother. I think that's interesting that it's the true middle. That's just listening to the program and knowing my situation, and also my father is one of five, and looking at their group of you know, brothers and sisters and what happened, I mean, I can definitely see a trend just within that particular set of influences that we definitely tend to branch out and kind of do our own thing. My sister is a psychologist, and my brother is, well, my brother does whatever he does is absolutely precious because he's the baby boy. and I kind of have always done, my mother will always say, well, Emily just does what Emily does, because if she decides to do something, then she just does it. So I work as a union stagehand.
Oh,
and
good for
I have
you.
Lived in Alaska, and I have lived in the Caribbean. And of our three children, I am the only one who has children of my own. And just kind of tying into what Adam was saying, there's a lot of pressure, I think, in society to not have children. You're kind of looked at like you have a third eyeball when you say, I want to be a mom and I want to have kids. And then to say, I want to have two or more is kind of like, whoa, what are you thinking? What are you doing? So it's kind of hard to balance because, and I said that when I had my second child, I said, I just really don't want them to grow up on their own. Their father is quite a bit older than me, and I know I'm not going to be around forever, and I know how important my bonds with my brother and sister are, and I just didn't want them to be alone, you know, after, obviously, you always hope that you don't outlive your children. So,
right. So I have lots of questions. You know, I have lots of questions for you. How many children do you have?
I have two.
Okay,
and two children.
And B, you're a union stagehand. That means that your hours are not necessarily regular. Do you get pressure from that?
Oh my goodness, yes, absolutely. I am fortunate in that my parents watch my children for me, because finding daycare for, you know, like say 6 p.m. to 3 o'clock in the morning is just kind of impossible. So I get help there. I am not with their father anymore. That was a very hard relationship. And actually, as I was waiting on the phone, I was hearing about how middle children tend to make very strong bonds. And I will say that's very, very true. Unfortunately, when it's not a good or a healthy relationship, I feel like we tend to hang on a little bit too long, because we think that we can negotiate and mediate and fix things. And sometimes you just can't.
Interesting.
So I get a lot of help from my parents, and I get a lot of help from my current boyfriend. But without that, it would be very, very difficult.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you very much for that. So she came up with two things, Adam. One is daycare. I mean, you know, that's an interesting thing. We don't have a society that necessarily makes it easy to take care of children while you go to work. Could that be why people are having fewer children?
That's definitely something I've heard back since the article has come out. A lot of people have gotten in touch with me and with the magazine to say, you know, if you look beyond the sort of obvious demographic statistics, you know, about, well, women are waiting longer to have children. But why is that? And one of the things is, you know, we don't have a sort of inbuilt structure that supports women who are having children. We don't have universal daycare. A lot of companies don't even have a sort of you know, sufficient parental leave policies. Mm-hmm. And that just, that does make it difficult. And I think if you're a parent, you sort of recognize that to have the first child is a momentous decision. You know, am I going to be a parent? Am I going to have a child? The second one, you start to think, well, as the caller mentioned, you know, I want my child to have a sibling, so let's have two children. And when you get beyond two, it becomes a more nuanced conversation. And I think it does become about resources and time and you know, your particular economic situation. And so a lot of people, I think, are deciding once they get to two that they feel like that's sufficient. It's obviously a very personal decision for everyone, but clearly there's some kind of a big, you know, shift going on.
We are talking about middle children, and we are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Gary from Brookfield, welcome to the program.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
I would tell you I'm a middle child, and I have an older sister and a younger brother. And the one thing I learned early on was I had to be a negotiator.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing, you know, we're all in our 60s now, is the two of them both understand and appreciate that and thank me for it a lot. And my parents did. They've passed on before they died, about the amount of effort I made in negotiating between my older sister and my younger brother throughout my life.
So interesting. And you are, do they not like each other, or you, they just kind of like don't get along?
Like, where are we going to go to eat? Or are we going to go to the beach today? Or are we going to go fishing? Or, you know, who's going to sit where on the airplane? Those kind of things.
Got it, Gary. I got it. So, Adam, you laughed at that. Where are we going to go to eat? You have had these questions before, and you have solved these problems, I take it.
Well, I wouldn't say I've necessarily solved them. I've certainly faced them. But, you know, that is one thing that comes up again and again with middle children, this idea of being a negotiator. And you know, this psychologist, Alfred Adler, who is sort of one of the pioneering figures in psychology, was one of the first people to look at birth order and how it affects kids. And he had this idea that middle children are actually more prone to grow up and be concerned with things like equality and justice and become, you know, people who fight for the rights of others because they themselves have felt a little bit downtrodden as children. And he always pointed to Abraham Lincoln as the sort of classic middle child who, you know, a great negotiator and someone who was concerned with the welfare of other people. And, you know, that's something I think you see again and again when you look at different middle children through history, that capacity for negotiation and peacemaking is something that you seem to develop at an early age.
So do you think that middle children necessarily define themselves more as not being the oldest or not being the youngest?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think it really depends on your particular family dynamic, because, you know, it's a very different thing to be the middle child of three than it is to be sort of number four of seven or something like that. And there are sort of like different little niches within middle childrendom where you can be sort of considered, like if there's six children, the fourth child can be considered sort of the oldest of the second cohort
right,
of kids.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting to hear the callers talk about the sort of sibling gender dynamics as well. It's a different situation if it's three boys than if it's, say, a boy, a girl, and a boy. You know, every psychologist I talked to about this was quick to point out that, like, there's no magic bullet. There's no one thing that's going to explain everything about you. But that birth order is a really interesting way of thinking about your relationship to your own siblings, because for the most part, everything else in your childhood was pretty similar. You had the same parenting, you know, this presumably the same sort of parenting philosophies applied. You grew up in the same place under the same circumstances. But as the callers have pointed out, often there's a lot of personality variation between siblings. And so this is one way to kind of think about how that happens.
We are talking about middle siblings. And you actually just mentioned larger families when you're in the middle. Danny from Oregon, Wisconsin, is part of that family. Danny, welcome to the program.
Hello. Yeah, so I have two older brothers, two younger brothers, two older sisters, and two younger sisters.
Hmm. So you were right in the middle of nine people?
Yes. And I liked growing up in a large family like that. It was good. But I tried to kind of use my position to my advantage. So sometimes the older kids would get to do something that the younger kids couldn't do, so then I was an older kid, you know. But if the younger kids could go trick-or-treating and the older kids couldn't, well, I was a younger kid.
So. Interesting. So did you, were you, as we just talked about, as Adam just said, were you, like, considered the older, the oldest of the second family?
Not so much.
Okay.
I wouldn't say so. There was one incident when I went off to college. I went up to move first and then came back, and I brought my four younger kids with me, and that was the only time that I felt like, yeah, I'm sort of the oldest of this group.
Huh. Interesting. Thank you very much, Danny. People with families with nine kids are definitely fewer than they were 40 years ago. Yes, Adam?
Oh, yeah, I think that's definitely true. And I mean, I feel like even 40 years ago, nine was probably unusual. But certainly, you know, I think that caller makes a really interesting point, and it sort of speaks to the sort of new scholarship about middle children, which is sometimes you can take something that might be thought of as a disadvantage. You know, middle children will often say, especially in a larger family, I was too young to do the stuff the older kids could do, and I was too old to do the stuff the younger kids could do. But your caller, simply by looking at it differently and saying, well, I get to do the young kids stuff with the young kids,
right,
and I get to do the older kids stuff, you know, it's looking at a disadvantage and seeing it as an advantage. And there's a lot of ways in which people are starting to do that with middle children, saying, you know, maybe you didn't get as much attention as a kid, but that left you free to blaze your own trail as an adult. Or maybe you didn't get the same amount of parental attention, but that made you a better, more loyal friend as an adult. And so a lot of it is really just perspective.
We are talking about middle children and birth order in general, and we are taking your calls. Are you a middle child? Did this work for you? Are you perhaps an older child and you fit into the stereotype, or you're just kind of confused as to what the stereotype is because really your middle sibling is kind of the boss of the family? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We are talking to Adam Sternberg, who wrote a piece on this for New York Magazine. So you argue that the number of middle children is declining in America at the time when we can really, really use them. So unpack that for me.
Well, you know, once I had established that this was an actual phenomenon, that there are fewer middle children now than there were, say, 40 years ago, and I looked into the research about, you know, what we associate, what kind of qualities we associate with middle children, it sort of struck me and my editor very quickly that the exact qualities that we think of in middle children are ones that I think if you look around at the world now, you'd say we need more of and not less. Peacemakers, you know, good negotiators, people who are loyal. You know, an interesting thing we came across because of what's happening with the Supreme Court right now, we said, well, let's look at the Supreme Court and see sort of how birth order is represented there. And it turns out that someone did a study just a couple of years ago of the history of the Supreme Court, and they found a very strong correlation between oldest and only children who serve as justices tend to have conservative views and tend to vote in favor of established law. And middle and youngest children tend to have more liberal views, and they tend to be more willing to overturn established law and set new precedents. And our current court is disproportionately made up of only and oldest children. It's,
wow.
I believe, six of the nine justices are only or oldest, three middles, and no youngest children on the court. So
wow.
There's a place where maybe we could use some more balance.
We are exploring birth order today with an emphasis on middle children. Adam Sternberg is a contributing editor to New York Magazine, and he wrote a piece about this. Do you fit into the stereotypical role of the middle child, maybe the older child or the younger child? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Email ideas@WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll be back in a moment. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're exploring birth order this morning and giving the middle child the spotlight for once. Do you fit into the stereotypical role of a middle child? Are you a mediator? Are you more of a private person? But at the same time, you yearn for attention. Do you have a lot of really good, close friends and relationships? Was standing out something you actively sought when you were growing up? If you have a story or experience that is quintessential to the middle child, we would love to hear it. And if you are totally the oldest or totally the youngest, we would like to hear that too. Also, if you just think that this is the silliest thing you've ever heard and this isn't real science, give us a call and talk about that too. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Adam Sternberg, oldest kids disproportionately grow up to be CEOs, you said. And youngest children disproportionately grow up to be comedians. Are there any theories as to why?
Well, I think, you know, one of the psychologists I spoke to who deals with child psychology said when you're talking about birth order, there's a kind of old joke. If you're at a conference about birth order, the first thing the speaker will always say is, how many people here are the oldest child? And invariably, a majority of arms, you know, go up in the air. The theory is that the oldest child bears the kind of mantle of expectation from the parents, and so they have a tendency to go disproportionately into sort of established careers, and they also are high, you know, they are disproportionately high achievers compared to other spots in the birth order. The idea with the youngest child is that they're just used to getting a lot of attention, a lot of approval, and so they become sort of performative, and that might lead them to become comedians. Although I can say that in my family, my parents always told me I was the comedian because I needed attention. I certainly was the one of my siblings who was the most likely to put on a silly wig and, you know, dance around in the corner trying to get people to look at me. So, you know, it really varies from person to person, but there are sort of general trends that we can see in each group.
We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. David from Richland Center, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So, your comment, sir?
Yes, I'm a middle child of three boys.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up being sort of the negotiator or don't ruffle the feathers kind of thing because I saw the conflicts that had with the older brother. But now as an adult, I've come out, I'm actually gay and grew up Baptist and have no contact whatsoever with the two other siblings. So I don't know if that's anything different with other three or middle kids, but I've turned out to be the more sort of liberal kind of thing, I guess, because I'm more social conscious than the other two seem to be, and they're more conservative and want nothing to do with me. And I tried to negotiate that for, I don't know, 10 or so years, and it just wasn't working, and so to survive, I had to strike out on my own.
Okay, first of all, I'm really sorry that your siblings don't speak to you. That's cruel, and I'm very sorry for that. How do you get along with extended family?
I live with my mother. My dad passed away, but the more as I'm close to 60 or turned 60 this year, that just don't get along with the others because, I don't know, don't seem to understand or I don't want to deal with a conflict. It's sort of that trying to be peacemaker without talking. I don't know. It's just a different dynamic, I think.
Interesting. Thank you, David, and keep going. I appreciate you calling in and telling us your story. So that's actually, he brings up a really great question, Adam. Are there a disproportionate number of gay kids who are born perhaps in the middle or youngest, or maybe gay kids who are oldest come out later, because they want to please people?
You know, that is something which I did not come across at all in my research for this article. And I believe that the sort of most current scholarship on this, that there's there's not a lot of credence given to the idea that sort of your personal circumstance as a child is going to determine your sexuality, that it's something that's sort of inherent to you. So I don't think there's any correlation between birth order and sexuality among kids.
Or coming out, or accepting yourself.
Or coming, exactly. Although I, you know, in hearing that caller's story, and I echo your sentiment to him, you know, the phrase that really struck me is that idea of striking out on your own. And you know, for every child, I think there's a moment when you come to terms with your relationship with your parents, your relationship with your siblings, your relationship with your family, and you have to determine, you know, how you're going to live your own life and be true to yourself. And if you're a middle child, it may be that you have a slight advantage in that respect, in that you don't have some of the same expectations or burdens on you, and you are able to strike out on your own and really, you know, live an authentic life for yourself.
We are talking about middle children and birth order in general. We've got a few minutes left here, and we're taking your calls. 800-642-1234. Got a couple of tweets that came in. Kelly Jo tweeted, I have three girls. The oldest is a leader. The middle child is quiet, and the youngest is an entertainer. They are all intelligent, but my middle child scores highest on academic tests. Is that normal?
You know, I think when you look at everyone as a group, oldest children and only children tend to have a slight advantage in academic achievement. Obviously, there's going to be a huge variance, you know, as you go family to family. But there is an idea that the oldest kid tends to be a little bit more academically oriented. And again, the idea is that may be related to the fact that they feel a certain onus of responsibility to, like, live up to an expectation.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I would say my older brother is quite a bit smarter than me. So in our family, we sort of conform to that. But again, there's going to be, you know, variations and exceptions to all of these.
Okay, hang on a second. So you are a mystery novelist. You are a journalist. You do all this research, and your brother is smarter than you. Talk to me.
My brother went to MIT and then did his postgraduate work at Stanford, so he's a smarty, you know. And my younger sister is very smart as well. You know, it's interesting looking, obviously, as the middle of three, as I was researching this article and speaking to the different experts, you can't help but compare your own experience. And, you know, there is a way in which it does both. It's interesting to think about the ways that your family conforms to these patterns, but also the ways in which they're different. And it made me think a lot about my own situation with my siblings and how lucky I am to sort of be where I am. I identified myself as a middle child, but my parents did a good job of making that feel like something special, not something that I should be sad about, or that there's a syndrome attached to it or anything. I always thought that the middle, it was like Goldilocks. You got too hot, too cold, and then right in the middle, it's just right. So I always felt like it was a great strength, and I'm very, you know, thankful to my parents that they made me feel that way about it.
We have another tweet that came in. Mark from Clover says he's the second of three kids, and he has three kids. But when he and his wife were planning their family, he actually wanted four because he didn't want to be a true middle due to his own experience. He didn't want to have a true middle. He says, my brother was always the first. My sister was always the last to do something. And I was always just the middle. It seems to me that that's sort of like is a usual theme for middle children. Oh, it's just me. Sort of like Winnie the Pooh. Oh, it's just me.
I mean, in that case, I would definitely encourage everyone who's a middle or who has a middle kid that they're raising to really, you know, think about it differently and think about being a middle as a strength rather than a weakness. And you know, the book I referenced earlier, this book called The Secret Power of Middle Children by Catherine Salmon, it's a really interesting examination of what it means to be a middle child. And she makes an excellent argument that, you know, being a middle can be a real sort of secret superpower for kids and for yourself as well if you're a middle child. So in a way, it's all about sort of how you think about it. And an interesting thing for me in talking to some oldest and youngest kids is you'll hear from them that they have some complaints about that too. The oldest feels like, why do I have to carry all the expectations?
Yes.
The youngest feels like, you know, my parents were exhausted by the time I came. They didn't give me the same amount of attention. So in some ways, it just comes down to how you look at it and how you sort of apply it to your life and try to think of it as an advantage.
You know, you could always tell who the oldest, who the middle, and who the youngest is by how many pictures the parents have. Picture the oldest, there are like twice as many pictures as the second child. And then by the third child, like, there are hardly any pictures at all. So.
Yes. This is a common complaint for middle kids, is there's not a single baby photo of me by myself as a baby. It's always in the picture with my older brother or sister. And that's one you hear a lot about. You know, it's painful to go back through the family photo album.
Multiples have the same issue. I was told that when I was pregnant. Take pictures of them individually, because somebody that I knew who was a twin got married and they were trying to find pictures of her for the wedding, for the reception. And all the pictures they could find were of the two of them. So so there you go. I want to talk about a couple of things here. The Barnum effect talks about maybe this isn't real science.
Well, yes. So, of course, there's a certain amount of skepticism about, the extent to which birth order actually holds true. And some psychologists have disputed some of the findings, and there have been studies in which it's more difficult to find a correlation with these qualities. And, you know, one of the things I came across is this idea of the Barnum effect, which a psychologist coined that term in the 1950s to describe, you know, we have a tendency, if someone describes a characteristic to us and says, this applies to you, whether it's because you're a man, a woman, a redhead, a middle child, a Leo, or whatever it is, and it's something you want to have applied to you, you'll say, oh yeah, that sounds right, that must be science. So if you're right. Already someone who feels like maybe you didn't get enough attention from your parents, and then you hear someone on the radio say, well, it's because you're a middle child, you'll say, yes, that's got to be true. And it could just be that you had inattentive parents. But
maybe
I have to say, having sort of spent a lot of time elbows deep in this research and talking to a lot of people, I do think that birth order, it is one important, you know, thing to consider. It's not the most important, and it's not certainly going to be the determining factor in how you turn into the person that you are. But it's interesting to think about, and I think, to all the middle children out there, I just say, be strong. Think of it as a superpower.
Think of it as a superpower. Adam Sternberg is an Edgar-nominated novelist and a contributing editor to New York Magazine. He recently wrote an article for The Cut entitled The Extinction of the Middle Child. Thank you very much for being here, Adam.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure.
And thank you to all the callers today. You guys make the show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show.